Curtis and Cosby.
The group dedicated to fight crime.
They're gonna chase it down.
From the street perspective, Curtis Sliwa.
All of it.
Please welcome Rita Cosby.
There's a lot of heat on the president.
The headlines, the issues, the people.
America!
From New York to D.C. to your neighborhood.
The Red Berets are helping the cities in fear.
Curtis Sliwa.
Founder and president of the Guardian Angels, Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Rita, that was an explosive interview.
Live, local, on it. Curtis and Cosby.
Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Curtis
Cosby.
77 WABC.
This is breaking news on 77 WABC New York.
Yesterday, we saw that the deadlocked jury in the Joseph Okoko trial, the wartime consigliere of Andrew Evilai Cuomo, was sent home by the judge, but ordered to come back and continue their deliberations today. They did. They showed up at 9 o'clock, and apparently they passed out a note saying that they are deadlocked on some charges, but they have a partial decision. We're expecting momentarily the jury foreman will announce what that partial decision is. We'll report to all of you. The person who is sitting on pins and needles over this is not just Joe Pococo, who is like the third son of Mario Cuomo, as it was described at the eulogy given by Andrew at Mario's wake and then also at the church service before his burial. But also Andrew Cuomo himself, because any hoped for presidential considerations could go right down the zoo chute if, in fact, Pococo has been found guilty of any charges. And Rita Cosby, this is what I'm anticipating.
Yeah, and listen, we have to see what happens, because yesterday the jury came back and said, after the six-week trial, can we come back with a partial verdict? You and I have been following this from the very beginning. And just to remind our listeners why this is so important, Pococo, who is like, you know, another son to Mario Cuomo, and we heard about that again, as you said, in the eulogy and
this
in
is,
comments.
This is my prediction.
All right, let's hear. Let's hear.
The judge did not have to issue a Allen charge, which I had to sit through four trials with John Gotti Jr., who
and
was charged.
Explain to everybody what an Allen charge. I know what it is, but explain to our listeners.
That means the jury is so hopelessly deadlocked. This is the final measure that a judge will take just to try to dislodge them from their deep-held positions. And usually the judge realizes it's a waste of time, but she or he wants to at least give it one last try. She did not, which would suggest to me that these jurors who have said they cannot come to a conclusion on any of the six charges have agreed on one of the charges.
Yeah, for sure.
And I believe it has to do with his wife, who received what they called a low-show job. Not a no-show job. A low-show job in which she would come like once a week. She'd get paid ungodly amounts of money, which was part of the corruption charge and basically the kickback charge. And that's the way Pococo was able to get the money from the energy companies up near Syracuse, which was like a quid pro quo.
And by the way, on the quid pro quo, just to remind everybody, he's accused of collecting it's more than $300,000 in bribes from a number of these other co-defendants, because remember, it's not just him, it's some of the other co-defendants, to help their companies with businesses before the state of New York.
So let me predict that he will be found guilty on one of the charges.
You think tied to the wife? You think it's going to come down tied to the wife?
I think that, to me, was the most conclusive, because she was given a low-show job, and she was being paid just ungodly amounts of money. In some of the instances, she didn't even show up for meetings. It reminded me of the same kind of situation that Dean the Greek Skelos, who had been the Republican leader of the majority in the Senate in Albany, how he had tried to set up his son, Adam, with a no-show job. And the son was complaining that occasionally his employer would say, hey, you think you could show up once a week, you know, like in a scene from The Sopranos where you're at least like reading Newsday,
so somebody
and
sees
drinking
you.
A cup of coffee.
Somebody
you
sees
know?
You walk through. And by the way, in that case, too, remember, it wasn't like his son had any the qualifications. And in this case, there's the two executives. It's Stephen Aiello, Joseph Girardi. And they are tied with Core Development. They're accused of paying Pococo. It's $35,000 through his wife to help with their redevelopment of Syracuse's Inner Harbor and sort of this exchange quid pro quo for this low-show job. And, of course, everybody stay tuned to us here on Curtis and Cosby because we will have the very latest details. And as you point out, Curtis, I think the key is here is obviously, you know, the kickbacks and all that stuff is terrible. But it is such a focus because of Governor Cuomo.
Hold on.
This is breaking news on 77 WABC New York.
Yes! He's guilty!
Curtis is elated.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Percoco guilty. And the verdict just coming in. One guilty verdict, at least, in the Percoco trial. And we're waiting to find out what the details of this is.
And let me explain this. How far back my relationship with Joe Percoco goes is that originally he was a graduate of Susan Wagner College, which overlooks the whole bay. You know, when you're coming across on the ferry from the South Ferry of Manhattan and you're coming to the North Shore. He grew up in Staten Island. He was recruited by the Cuomos early on. He was like in his 1920s, you know.
Yeah, long relationship.
And they hit it off, him and Andrew. Andrew, who was his father's campaign manager at a very young age. They called them the Supreme Cousines, the Italian Stallions. There were some others involved in the campaign. And this is the reason that Preet Bharara got so upset with Cuomo, that he basically made his number one obsession was to try to end up pursuing an indictment against him also for corruption. Preet Bharara at that time was going to law school at Harvard University, and he was a devotee of Mario Cuomo and his liberal progressive ways. He loved Mario. So he said in the summertime, you know, I want to be an intern on the campaign, the reelection campaign of Mario Cuomo. And so he was accepted into the fold, except they were all these young Italian guys.
Curtis, sorry to interrupt you. We just found out guilty of three felonies in the bribery case.
Yeah!
Just crossing. I knew you'd be cheering for that. Sorry to interrupt you on that. But Joseph Percoco, a former top aide and confidant to Governor Cuomo, convicted now of three felonies in connection with accepting that $300,000. We'll try to find out what those are, but it is three felonies. Again, the breaking news coming in right now here.
This is better than sex for me. I got to tell you this. Well, I have such knockers over this.
Can I say one thing from talking to your wives? That everything's better than sex with
you. Oh, man, but you don't understand. This guy and I have been at war for years. So let me finish the story about Preet
Bharara. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, now that we know about the three
felonies. So Preet comes back and he's a real believer. He's idealistic. Remember, he's a law school student at Harvard. And so they accept him into the fold, the campaign team. And so Andrew Cuomo, campaign manager for his father's reelection, and Joe Percoco, the leg breaker, the wartime consigliere, they say, hey, Gunga Din, Go on a coffee run for us. Now, you don't think Preet Bharara forgot that, did you?
Right, of course not.
And they would be laughing and they'd make fun of Preet because he wasn't Italian.
Right,
an East Indian.
Preet, payback. So you're saying payback. A lot of this was payback.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, whenever there was dirty work to be done for Mario or dirty work to be done for Andrew Cuomo, it was Joe Percoco who dutifully would go. Very much like Tom Hagen, you know, the peacetime consigliere for the Corleone family, for Marlon Brando. He would visit the suspect in question, and he would say either Governor Mario Cuomo or, in this case, Andrew Cuomo, they want this, and they want it now. And if you stand in their way, there will certainly be consequences for your actions. And I always described it as sort of the valise he would walk into the meeting with. He'd pull out a Louisville Slugger baseball bat and ready to kneecap you. He was as loyal as anyone could get. You better believe when he was arrested on these corruption charges that, in fact, they tried to flip him every which way against Andrew Cuomo, and he just took the code of omerta. He would not.
And by the way, I'm just getting some details on what those three felonies are, Curtis. two honest services fraud charges, and one solicitation of bribes and a gratuity charge. We're trying to find out if that's connected to the wife, like you and I were just talking about. The jury found him not guilty on three others. As you pointed out, there were six charges against him. But the breaking news, if you're just tuning in right here to Curtis and Cosby on 77 WABC, after a six-week trial that ended with the jurors saying they were deadlocked repeatedly, the judge going back, and they come back with a partial verdict just in again. Joseph Percoco, like a son to Mario Cuomo, like a brother to Governor Cuomo, and that's why this is very, very big news.
In fact, let us take you back to the eulogy that was done by Andrew Cuomo for the passing of his father just 2 years ago, in which he made that reference.
And my father's third son, who sometimes I think he loved the most, Joe Percoco, really did an extraordinary job, and they did an extraordinary job with his funeral, and we want to thank them.
Yeah, listen, I mean, he was as close can be. And that's why this is so important. And remember, Curtis, this comes on the breaking news that now it looks like Governor Cuomo, it's not official yet, but Cynthia Nixon, the actress, looks like she's going to be giving him a run for his money in the Democratic primary for the New York gubernatorial. He thought it was a slam dunk.
In fact, let's go to Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, who has been covering this case and has covered the Percoco-Cuomo relationship over the years. Thanks for joining us, Ken.
Hey, Ken.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, so explain to us what transpired, because you and I talked just last night on the drive home at 5, and it looked like this jury was hopelessly deadlocked. It would be a mistrial, and Percoco would either go home or be scheduled for a new trial.
Yeah, and instead they convicted him on three counts and found him not guilty on three counts. It's kind of a surprise. I think everybody following this thought this was heading for a mistrial.
Now, Ken, tell us about the three charges, because we know that it's two honest services fraud charges, the other solicitation. Tell us about that.
I'm sorry, you faded out there.
Yeah, the three charges we are being told is two honest services fraud charges, the other a solicitation of briberies and gratuity charge. Tell us about these three.
Well, without having, I'm not in the courtroom, so I haven't seen which ones, but you know, certainly he was what the jury was looking at the time was whether it was a bribe to accept what the prosecutors described as a low-show job for his wife. That's what a lot of this centered on. So I would not be surprised if that's what the guilty verdict centered on as well.
And Ken, let's talk about the implications, because obviously the big story here, Ken Lovett, with the New York Daily News talking here on Curtis and Cosby on 77 WABC. Ken, you know, the big news, of course, is the implications with Cuomo, with the governor. We know that, you know, it's not a slam dunk for him this year. He's got a de Blasio on his tail. He may have Cynthia Nixon on his tail. He's certainly going to have a lot of Republicans, some folks in the Reform Party, too. There's going to be a lot of people, a lot of challengers. What are the political implications? Because as we've been talking about, Percoco very close to the Cuomo family.
Yeah, it's a huge black eye for a governor who in 2010 stood in front of the Tweed Courthouse as he announced his campaign for governor and promised to clean up Albany. And now it's the second governor, not including Patterson, but the second governor in a row who was elected on a platform of cleaning up Albany, who has had some disgrace around him. You know, Elliot Spitz had to resign in disgrace, in this case, a top aide. But I'll tell you, even if there was no conviction, this would have been a horrible situation for the governor because of what came out of the trial. You know, things that weren't necessarily alleged criminally, but how his office was run, how Joe Percoco, even though he wasn't on the state payroll anymore, was able to call up, come into the office and use his office potentially for political purposes, which would violate state law, by the way. How Percoco would call up future employers for staffers they didn't want to leave and threaten them that if they hired them, there would be issues. There was just a whole lot of stuff that came out and shed a light on how this administration operated that I'm sure Cynthia Nixon, as well as the Republicans and anyone else, were all prepared to use against Andrew Cuomo. And now the convictions is just for them, for his critics, his opponents, a cherry on the top.
Now, Ken Lovett, finally, the lead witness for the feds in this trial, probably in my mind was the most tainted individual who has ever testified in a federal courtroom. Could you describe how halfway through his testimony, the feds were forced to lock him up, their lead witness?
Yeah, he had testified, you know, when he cut a prosecution agreement. Basically, the feds knew that he had a really bad background of things and fraud and theft and all these things. And as part of his cooperation agreement, that they would look for leniency if he cooperated, it was you couldn't get into trouble again. And what did he do? While he was talking to the prosecutors, he had a room at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City, and then he tried to fight the charge on his credit card, saying he never stayed there. So he violated the agreement. It was a huge embarrassment for the prosecution, but apparently the jury was able to look past it and say there was enough other evidence to find for a conviction on three counts.
In fact, Ken, he was arrested that weekend.
Yeah, what a mess.
And when he came back to court to complete his testimony, the judge had to explain to the jury, he's just been arrested by the feds for violating his agreement.
Ignore that, please.
Right.
and by the way, Todd Howe, you know, who went through all this, was due to be the star witness in the next federal corruption trial involving associates and former aides to the governor, involving the upstate Buffalo Billions.
And by the way, I love, Ken, that they were saying, listen, don't trust this guy's credibility, but here's our witness,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they thought that, that he was close enough to the governor and his people that he would have credibility, but then, you know, I don't remember ever seeing a witness arrested in the middle of a trial, a star witness like
never,
that.
Never.
So, yeah, that was wild.
But do appreciate it.
It makes you wonder, what do you do for the next trial?
Yeah, really? What's act two?
Do appreciate it, Ken. Love it. He
Thanks,
is the
Ken.
Albany Bureau Chief of New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News, who will track this case at the time of the arrest, every step of the way. I got to tell you, Rita, even I, as much as I wanted Pococo to go down on these counts.
You wanted. You're elated.
I know, but I said after the lead witness was arrested halfway
right,
through
on.
His testimony by the feds who were using him, that the jury would clearly, it would almost be like at that point forward, they don't want to hear anything.
Which, by the way, says that the evidence must have been pretty strong, because that's what I was thinking as we were just talking with Ken. Because
they would have gotten into jury nullification at that moment.
Absolutely.
They would have spoken with one another
and would have said, "Wait a minute, why can we trust anything?"
Can you believe that their lead witness they had to arrest on Friday night and they bring him back into court on Monday to complete his testimony?
Which is why it had to be so damning. And in other words, the evidence I think had to be so overwhelming that they could overcome that the process. And again, everybody, if you're just tuning in here on 77 WABC, the jurors finding Joe Prococo very close, longtime friend and former aide of Governor Cuomo. You hear Curtis elated.
I'm quelling
three
such
felonies. Three felonies convicted. And the breaking news here on Curtis and Cosby.
Our numbers 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Chasing it down.
Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Curtis
Cosby.
77 WABC.
And it is 40 minutes after noon here on Curtis and Cosby on 77 WABC. And when you hear that song, what do you think of? I think of Richard Simmons and his little tight pants and little tight shorts, doing his little bends and deep breathing exercises.
No, I think of Grease. Right, I think of John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John.
That's a little more pleasant image.
Oh, interestingly,
by the way,
has been suffering from cancer.
Yes.
She's had many therapies.
Yes, she sure has.
She now uses medical marijuana back in Australia, outside of Melbourne.
We should have invited her to our Pubs and Politics.
We should have.
Yeah,
on
Monday night, which, by the way, is sold out, everybody.
Yes, yes.
How great is that? It's going to be at our Stage 17 sold-out event. And we have Mike Z. We have Joel Giambra, of course, who is the New York Independent Governor's candidate, who's going to be one of them. Herb London, Stephen Baldwin. And then we also have Monica Crowley. Just got a message from her. She's all excited. Judge Napolitano and Brian Kilmeade. We got an all-star lineup. And I can't wait to see a lot of you guys coming out for it. So it's going to be wonderful
but sold
on Monday.
Out, sold out. But we'll certainly have lots of cuts from that.
Yeah, and Facebook
There'll be video
Live.
Of that.
Yep.
Facebook Live.
Yeah, so definitely tune in on Facebook
Too
Live.
Too bad
everybody.
We didn't have Richard Simmons there to warm up the crowd because, as you know, he would always start out by saying, hey, you know, we as Americans, we're getting too fat. We got to work out. I mean, that was his calling card before, you know, you had people screaming invectives at you, treating you, you know, as if they were the sadists and you were the masochist. But that was such a successful format. And then he would always cry. He would always cry with the person right in question.
That sounds just like him.
Make sure you were gay. Huh? And that everything you need, that everything you need, you have.
That sounds just like him.
Kleenex was his main sponsor at that time. Kept that,
that was him,
on
the,
for a long
By the way,
time.
That literally was him. I thought maybe it was a mirror image of him, but it really is him. And now he is all riled up because Richard Simmons, this is such a twist and an interesting turn, because Richard Simmons, of course, there's been a lot of stories about him in the tabloids for years and years and years. And he sued the National Enquirer and Radar Online because they had done a number of stories saying that he was transitioning to become a woman. And he wore his clothes like a woman half the time, but he's such a character. And, you know, and Richard, 69 years old, sued, took them to court. And unlike Hulk Hogan and number of these others who have won some big lawsuits against Gawker and some of these other different publications, Richard Simmons, the judge ruled in a twist that calling somebody transgender in this day and age is not necessarily defamatory. In other words, if you say somebody is going through therapy to become a woman in this day and age where there has been a lot of this with Chelsea Manning and so many of these other cases, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And that in and of itself is not a defamatory action, that he's a public figure. And because of this, that it's a frivolous lawsuit, and he now has to pay National Enquirer and Radar Online for their attorney's fees, which are 130 G's.
Hold on a second. $130,000, slowly I turn, step by step. Isn't that the settlement that Stormy Daniels received from Michael Cohen, the personal attorney of Donald Trump?
Ah, maybe Richard Simmons is in on it. Maybe,
no, it's just maybe, ironic.
Yes.
That's the figure.
Maybe Richard Simmons is the conduit.
But normally the National Enquirer, because it's nonstop production of a lot of specious stories, they get sued. They accept that as the price of doing business because they sell so many copies and they have advertising to boot. Is that I don't think there's ever been a time in which the person in question suing the National Enquirer had to pay the tabloid.
Yeah, it's very
this
interesting. It's really ironic. And, of course, I'm sure he's probably going to appeal this just because it is such an unusual decision. But that's what the judge based it on, saying that calling someone this, and because he is a public figure, and, of course, when you take someone to court like this, some of your dirty laundry comes out.
When in the past, I've used terms like, because they didn't have that term, I'd say man, woman, or frozen vegetable.
You're okay. You don't insult the vegetables.
It's not an insulting term.
Or carrots.
Anyway,
or
let's
tomatoes.
Open up our phone lines. Does anyone feel sympathy or empathy for
Richard Simmons
out there?
Let's hear him cry again. Let's hear him cry again.
$30,000.
Wanted to make sure you were gay, and that everything you need, you have.
And that really is Richard Simmons.
He was a great crier.
1-800. He probably is crying now with this.
848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, speaking of lawsuits, the lead story locally was the crash of the helicopter in the East River the other day on Monday. Well, actually, it was Sunday. And then the helicopter was removed from the East River yesterday. Five drowned when harnesses letting them dangle their feet out became death traps because obviously the doors were open. The pilot survived. He was from Connecticut, but the four passengers perished as they drowned as the helicopter turned over, flipped over. And they were not able to escape their harnesses.
And then the other thing that's come out through all of this is that apparently these harnesses, and I've gone, you and I have talked about this, I've gone on a number of these sort of tourist helicopters where you've gotten a tour. I have not done the one in New York. I've actually been asked to do it a number of times, and I have not done it. And in fact, I was supposed to do it for a charity not too long ago, and I wasn't able to do it due to my schedule. But I have done it a number of times, like in Hawaii and in other places, and it's a great experience. You have the doors open. You're sort of looking out. You get this bird's eye view, especially in Hawaii where I've gone. Like, you get to see the caverns and the waterfalls, and it's a very cool experience. But I will now think twice about it after this, because what's happened is they've determined that in this particular crash, it was a Liberty helicopter. It's the third time since 2002 that they've had an accident, a serious accident. And they've said that in the briefing, you know, you always get these briefings, you know, yes. And they always tell you, you know, no matter what happens here, sign on the dotted line, because they have to cover their butts or whatever else. But they said in the briefing, and we've seen from someone who was in one of these briefings, not in this particular one with this crash, but another one, that they say to you, okay, we're going to put these big harnesses on you, which, you know, you got to when you're up there. And if something happens, you got to cut loose of it. And even somebody I was watching on the news earlier today was stated that, yes, they were told that during the briefing, but they really weren't paying attention. And who goes on a helicopter and thinks, okay, well, if I get stuck and flipped over like this helicopter did, that I've got to not just snap myself out like you do on a normal seatbelt.
Sure, sure.
You got to cut yourself out is what they're saying. And you basically should bring a knife. So next time you go on a helicopter, you got to bring a knife with you?
Blowtorch, you know, something to extricate you. And it's interesting because when this occurred on Sunday during the day, that night I had a conference call with the chapter leaders in California because I have a regional conference that I'll be attending and hosting up in Redding, in Shasta County.
Beautiful Redding.
And the chapter leader there said to me, gee, on Sunday morning before you head back to New York, because we'll be flying back from San Francisco International, we want to take you on a helicopter ride and oversee everything, which I'm up for. You know,
yeah, which you're an adventurer, yeah.
Right, and then Nancy, my girlfriend said, no, I'd rather you not do that.
Now,
obviously.
Now, did she say that as a result of this crash, or she would have said that in general?
I think because of the crash, because it was so recent. It was that same day.
Because, you know, I have never really thought about that, self-admittedly, when I've gone up in all these choppers, but now I will.
But I decided to get weak and soft, not because I don't like going up in copters. I do. But rather because when we first met and we got serious with one another, she was a motorcycle enthusiast.
Yep.
Speed bikes.
Yep.
And I told her, no. You're taking too much risk. I said, look, I know about taking risk. I risk my life all the time. I just don't want you on a motorcycle anymore.
Wait. So, okay, so you're the guy who goes over in the middle of a fight and says, okay, I'm not backing down.
Right.
But you're not going to let her go on a motorbike. That seems a little hypocritical,
Curtis. I've seen too many injuries, concussions. People are so busted up from that.
Wait,
so
you're not afraid of going up to the gang, guys. You're
right.
Not afraid of doing that.
Right.
But you're afraid of a motorbike.
Well, not so much me, but I didn't want my loved one on the motorcycle. So she agreed after a lot of debate. So I folded on this one since she folded on that one.
So it's a deal. It's a deal. So you're not going to go up now.
I'm not going up there in Redding.
Well, and I think a lot of people are going to think twice. And I want to put that out to our listeners. Will you think twice now about going up in these helicopters? Because when you hear that now, it's sort of standard procedure. And how many times are you on these things? And I know, like, when I've been up on these, you know, experiences, you're up in Hawaii, you know, in all these different places where I've gone up in so many choppers through the years because I love it. I love traveling.
The wind starts slapping
yeah.
you around.
And a couple times it's been a little, you know, iffy or whatever. But listen, you're also talking to a gal. I was up in a chopper with Vince McMahon and Big Show, of course, the big wrestler there. And I was up in Afghanistan where rockets were firing a couple of days before. So I'm a little crazy, right? So I have a little bit of a different standard, right? But I will think twice about being in some of these tourist choppers now because you don't pay attention. You know, they give you these briefings, you sign off your life and say, okay, everything's going to be fine. And who thinks of these type of things?
Well,
I think we have to pay more attention
in
the future.
Let's go to our callers, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Curtis and Cosby.
The group dedicated to fight crime.
They're going to chase it down.
From the street perspective, Curtis Sliwa.
All of it.
Please welcome Rita Cosby.
There's a lot of heat on the president.
The headlines, the issues, the people.
America!
York to D.C. to your neighborhood. The Red Berets are helping the cities in fear. Curtis Sliwa.
Founder and president of the Guardian Angels, Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Rita, that was an explosive interview.
Live, local, on it. Curtis and Cosby.
Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Curtis Cosby.
77 WABC.
We call it the House of Chaos because we've had the West Wing. We've had the House of Cards. And this White House of President Donald Trump clearly looks like a house of chaos. Every other week, somebody is segueing out. Either they're leaving because they choose to leave, or they're forced to leave. Before we even talk about the Secretary of State Tillerson being shown the door and his replacement being announced, the president's aide-de-camp, his personal assistant, was taken out of the White House on Monday and told, out of here.
For a security reason, and we still don't know the details, John McEntee, who was his personal assistant, personal aide, and two senior administration officials are saying the cause of the firing they will not release. It's an unspecified security issue.
I don't know mine.
And some people are wondering, is this sort of tied to, you know, John Kelly kind of coming down hard on everything happening with Jared Kushner and his security, and after Rob Porter, remember all that stuff?
Sure,
I mean, there's been
sure.
so much drama in the White House on the security issues. So was there some issue that they discovered now?
As we are high atop Madison Square Garden, these great facilities provided to us for this broadcast that has protected us from three nor'easters, keeping us nice and warm and toasty and dry.
Yeah, and definitely,
thank
by
you.
The way, not a bad nor'easter, thank God,
right.
in the last 24 hours. But there is obviously a lot of storm
thank
clouds.
Thank you. Thank you, NJDiet.com. But can you break it down, Tillerson's exit as Secretary of State and how quickly the president has rebounded to appoint his replacement?
Yeah, and I'll actually say that I think this was a long time coming, and I want to hear what our callers think on that. Is this a long time calling? Is this the right thing to do? I think it is. I mean, I think he and Tillerson were so at odds, just diametrically opposed philosophically, that I'm actually surprised this didn't happen sooner. The number is 1-800-848-9222. 1-800-848-9222. And here is the president asked about it because, as we found out, we woke up this morning and found out that Rex Tillerson has been relieved of his duties. That's a nice way to say he's been fired. And replaced by CIA Director Mike Pompeo, who is a lot closer to the president. And this is what Donald Trump had to say about it.
I respect his intellect. I respect the process that we've all gone through together. We have a very good relationship for whatever reason, chemistry, whatever it is. Why do people get along? I've always, right from the beginning, from day one, I've gotten along well with Mike Pompeo. And frankly, I get along well with Rex, too. And, you know, I wish Rex a lot of good things. I think he's going to do, I think he's going to be very happy. I think Rex will be much happier now. But I really appreciate his service. But with Mike, we've had a very good chemistry right from the beginning.
Now, we've heard two different versions, sort of. There are some reports out there that Rex Tillerson knew this was coming and was informed of it. Remember, he cut short his recent trip. And then there's another report that came out this morning I was seeing on Fox News where basically someone close to Rex Tillerson said that he was planning on staying on, that it was sort of news to him.
Remember, at a meeting, apparently, Tillerson, while listening to the president describe foreign policy, called him an idiot.
Yeah, and of course, remember, when he was asked about it, he didn't deny it. And that, listen, as soon as you heard that, I was actually surprised he stayed on that long.
And if we look at the situation, which will now result in our president, Donald Trump, having a sit-down with the evil seed of Kim Jong, mentally ill, behind the kimchi curtain of North Korea, location to be determined sometime in late May. Remember, it was Tillerson who said, no, let's try diplomacy. And the president smacked him down and said, don't knock yourself out. Diplomacy is not going to work. Well, apparently, at least at this juncture, diplomacy has worked to score for the president what may well be his number one triumph as president in the short time that he's been in the presidency.
And in addition to that, Curtis, too, Donald Trump, now we're learning that basically he didn't discuss this with Tillerson. And what I thought was interesting on that whole North Korea thing, that was one of the first times that you really saw such a clear schism. So many times, I mean, covering White Houses through the years, so many times, like, usually, even if maybe they don't agree, they sound like they agree publicly. But here was Tillerson coming out so blatantly different. It was so confusing. Remember, on one show, he's saying one thing. Donald Trump on the other show is saying another thing. And you can't have that in a White House. You got to have people who have the same message as the president, whether you agree or not. That is so important publicly. And Donald Trump was asked about it today because this was such an important meeting. He's meeting with his arch nemesis before May, Kim Jong-un. We don't know where. We don't know when yet. But that's a huge deal. And Donald Trump was asked, did you talk to Tillerson about it? And this is what he had to say.
I really didn't discuss it very much with him, honestly. I made that decision by myself. Rex wasn't, as you know, in this country. I made the North Korea decision with consultation from many people, but I made that decision by myself.
Well, this is the president's philosophy, whether it is Tillerson who's leaving, whether it is Pompeo who is replacing him, the former CIA director, the former congressman from Kansas. When it comes to Donald Trump running foreign policy, he said very declaratively months ago,
I'm a business person, and I tell my people, well, you don't need to fill slots, don't fill them. But we have some people that I'm not happy with their
But
thinking
Assistant
process.
Secretary of State, you're not getting rid
All
of that
right,
position.
But let me tell you, the one that matters is me. I'm the only one that matters, because when it comes to it, that's what the policy is going to be. You've seen that. You've seen it strongly.
This is the problem, though. Read it. Saudi Arabia, we have no U.S. ambassador who has been appointed to replace Obama's heir.
By the way, we have a lot of ambassadorial that are open.
Right.
I mean,
but
around the
biggies,
around the world.
The biggies, South Korea, Turkey, Australia. You would say to yourself, okay, we're making this change from Tillerson to Pompeo. But you've got to have U.S. ambassadors who know the layout of the land. This is not an ambassadorship like in Saudi Arabia, South Korea, Turkey, or Australia that you give to a big donor.
No,
like,
these
you know,
are important ones.
Ambassador to the Antilles or Antigua.
By the way, I would love that. I would love ambassador to, I don't know, maybe Bermuda or
Bermuda,
something.
Bermuda, right, right.
I'll take ambassador to St. Lucia.
Right,
St. Lucia, give me that one.
But these key countries, which are flashpoints for us,
yeah,
both allies and, like in the case of Turkey, you never know where they're going to be dependent on the day.
Or the hour.
You got to have an ambassador, a man or a woman there who's knowledgeable of the politics there, the layout, so that they can properly inform the president and obviously his staff in terms of what is transpiring there before the president picks up the phone and has a conversation, let's say,
Absolutely.
With the leader there. Or they have a meeting in a joint session, G7, somewhere around the world. Incredibly important. And in this administration, it just does not seem to be a priority on that. Let's go to our phones, 1-800-848-WABC. First up in the queue is Stan, who's calling from Forest Hills. Welcome to Rita Cosby and Courtesy on WABC, Stan.
Hi, Stan.
How are you? You guys hit it exactly. Nobody talks about it, but it is. The State Department has not filled spots. Hundreds of them have. People have quit. And as you said, ambassadors, State Department officials across the embassy line all over the world have not been filled. And this lunatic wants to have a meeting with Kim Jong-un.
Wait. Now, let me take issue, Stan. Why do you think it's a problem with meeting with Kim Jong-un? How are you going to solve things if you don't meet
first
with the people?
First of all, let's understand something. We gain nothing with this man as president meeting this guy. This is exactly what they've wanted for years. We gain nothing.
What do you have to lose, Stan?
Wait a minute,
Stan. What do you have to lose?
No, at the moment, we're gaining nothing. There's not going to be any peace. They're not going to reduce their nuclear weaponry at all. What are you kidding?
You don't know that, Stan. You know what? And you know what? By the way, Stan, are you an expert on foreign policy?
Rita, Donald Trump is an incompetent. It isn't going to happen. And having a meeting only benefits them.
And Stan, let me tell you, Stan, if it was President Barack Obama, it was Bill Clinton, it was Bush, if it's Donald Trump, I actually think anything we can do to take a chance to reduce war, I'm all for it.
No, in this case, not with these people. Not with this people.
Stan, you got a one-track mind, and you're obviously not thinking of the bigger picture.
You don't deal with realism, Rita. You don't. You're dealing with falsehoods and so forth. It's not going to happen. There may not
Stan,
be
a Stan, you know what? Maybe we need to hire you instead of Rex Tillerson. Then that's the next opportunity.
That's fine with me. As long as Trump isn't president, I'll do it. Absolutely.
You know what? Stan, you got an opportunity there, Stan. You got to slide right in.
848-WABC. Let's go to Dan, who I think is calling from Brick Township in New Jersey, who wants to respond to Stan, who were just sparring with Rita.
Yeah, I love Stan. Come
Welcome
on,
to WABC.
Stan, Danny. Call back, Stan.
How are you? This guy, Stan, is a moron and a plant from the Democratic Party. Kim Jong-un has been threatening the Western Hemisphere when Barack Obama was president and Barack ran with his tail between his legs and hid under the bed. Putin had to warn Kim Jong-un. Castro went to say you can't keep threatening the Western Hemisphere. This has been going on a long time. The rapport between Trump and Kim Jong-un is a positive.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Stan. I'm with you, Dan. And I think, Stan,
what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, Stan.
If North Korea is going to shoot nukes someplace,
well, that's why, Dan, I'm with you. And I think people like Stan who called earlier, I think it's a very naive approach to think that we just shut out the world. You know, I'm with you.
Was Tillerson the good cop to Trump's bad cop?
It may have been, or it may have been his sentiments and clearly not in line. Because, listen, look at the track record. It wasn't just on North Korea. Tillerson was against the president in terms of the Iran deal. He supported the Iran deal. The president was obviously against that. There were so many different issues. And the other thing about some of these positions at the State Department, Tillerson kept pushing for a lot of Bush appointees. Remember, Tillerson was basically brought in through Condoleezza Rice, who, of course, was with National Security under Bush. So it was a lot of these Bushies. And that's why this White House has had so many mixed messages. You've had the Bushies, and then you've had the more Trumpites, if you
right,
will.
Right, but you see, the president was aware of that, and he decided he wanted to go out of the box. He didn't want his State Department, lifetime official, or someone who had retired from
exactly.
the Senate or who was a senator.
No, he thought it was a creative position. Approach. Right. He thought it was a creative approach to try
right.
and tell
but he does that with everything. Look, Cohen, who just left to go back to Goldman Sachs and those thieves there, might be replaced by Larry Kudlow, our colleague here at WABC. And remember, Rita, Kudlow believes in free trade.
Although Kudlow has recently, and it was interesting, one of the things I was watching this morning is when President Trump came out and sounded a little more warm to Larry than he has in the past. He's always been very positive to Larry.
I know, but he's a free trader.
But he said that Larry's position is more coming around to mine.
Well, that means Larry Kudlow wants the job.
And he said that Larry, who was very vocal against tariffs, is now not as vocal against tariffs. So it sounds like having a little more of a meeting of the minds.
Anyway, let's go to the phones. It's Charles from Somerset. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here on WABC. Charles.
Hi, Charles.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. We're just calling to say I don't see how a serious professional will want to work for this president. Seriously.
Okay? Why? Why is that? Why is that, Charles?
Why is that? You tell me why. I mean, I'm surprised you're asking.
Charles, I think it's an honor to work for any president because
I don't believe that to be the case, okay? In this situation, that is not the case because you're looking at working for somebody who has, one, no loyalty to whoever works for them.
Charles, okay? Let me cut you off. Have you ever voted for a Republican in your life or anybody other than a Democrat?
I'm going to answer that by saying, imagine if Obama was trying to meet with Kim Jong-un. I know exactly how. Rita, would you say exactly what you're saying that you just said a little while ago?
Yes, I absolutely would.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, I would.
I've known you for years.
No,
this
Charles.
Is Charles, on your part.
Charles,
I know that.
Charles, I absolutely would. You obviously don't know me. I think I know myself a little better than
Rita,
you know me, Charles.
I've been listening to this station for 20 years. And I know you, and I know you're being a hypocrite.
You know what, Charles? Actually, I'll take issue with you. You know what? I think I know myself a little better than you, Charles, and I absolutely would, because I'm someone who would want the greater good, and I think if it helped to resolve and avert war, you bet, Charles. And thank you for the personal psychoanalysis, Charles.
The president has addressed what I call the house of chaos, the sort of indoor-outdoor constantly functioning. He has said, no, everybody wants to work here.
The White House has tremendous energy. It has tremendous spirit. It is a great place to be working. Many, many people want every single job. You know, I read where, oh, gee, maybe people don't want to work for Trump. And believe me, everybody wants to work in the White House. They all want a piece of that Oval Office. They want a piece of the West Wing. And not only in terms of it looks great on their resume, it's just a great place to work. It's got tremendous energy. It's tough. I like conflict. I like having two people with different points of view, and I certainly have that. And then I make a decision. But I like watching it. I like seeing it. And I think it's the best way to go. I like different points of view.
Well, I'm more fascinated, not at Tillerson's exit, because we saw that coming. The moment he called the president an idiot, his
and
days were numbered.
And didn't deny it. I mean,
right.
Come on. You can't work for someone saying that.
His aide-de-camp, his personal assistant, was escorted out of the West Wing of the White House on Monday.
Yeah, we're trying to get details. That's John McEntee, who is the assistant to President Trump.
Hired by the campaign, which is already underway, 3 years away from the election, but he's been hired on. But you have to say to yourself, what the hell did this guy do to get escorted out of the West Wing?
Well, and also, what's going on with all these security clearances? Because you think about what happened with Ron Porter, and then you think of this. It's like all these security issues. Why is that not vetted beforehand?
1-800-848-WABC. Put aside your political differences, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to Mad Dog Mattis, the general in charge of the Pentagon, about the need for more ambassadors.
Frankly, they need to be as fully funded as Congress believes appropriate, because if you don't fund the State Department fully, then I need to buy more ammunition, ultimately.
In other words, give me more bullets if I don't have people.
Well, he means if you don't have people there to ward off a potential problem.
Give me ammo, baby.
Right, then I'm going to have to go to war on behalf of the United States.
Right.
And I thought that was a very sound thing to say, whether you support Trump or you don't support Trump, that especially if we just look at Saudi Arabia, South Korea, Turkey, Australia, we really need, now that Pompeo will be in charge, to find competent men or women that can serve as ambassadors.
Absolutely. And they're saying we just need more bodies.
Who know the lay of the land. Let's go to the phones. And it's Robert who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to mention about the diplomacy. If I know, Rita, I would love to see diplomacy also, but why would anybody think that putting Mike Pompeo to be diplomatic? I don't know. Does anybody even know? I mean, the guy is responsible for torturing people. The guy, you could just kiss diplomacy goodbye.
All right, Robert, are you familiar with a hearing where Pompeo said that torture is illegal and that he would not order waterboarding or other enhanced interrogation practices? Are you familiar with that?
Yes, but he was never prosecuted for that. He oversaw, I mean, we're talking about...
I just said to you that Pompeo said he believed it to be illegal, and you said...
Yeah, I understand, but then why wasn't... But then why? But he was head... He was in the CIA. Rob, he was overseeing that.
Yeah, but he wasn't the boss of it at the time.
Right.
Oh, who was responsible for that? I mean, who was held responsible for it?
That was the policy of it. You're getting into a whole policy issue. And the reason, let me say, the reason I think Pompeo, just everything aside, torture and all these other things aside, the reason I think Pompeo actually, I think, will be a better Secretary of State. And I thought it was interesting about Tillerson. I never really thought Tillerson would be super effective, because I could tell there was a schism, a different policy from Trump. I think you got to have somebody, however you guys believe about the president, you got to have someone at least who is carrying out his policies to be effective.
Well,
and Pompeo's a lot closer to the president.
The final words attributed to Tillerson as our Secretary of State before he got sacked and replaced by Pompeo
was, oh no?
No.
Oh, help?
A scorching attack.
Exxon, let me call you. Do you have an opening?
No, a scorching attack against his very dear friend, Vladimir Putin, who had bestowed upon Tillerson the Russian highest order for a foreign citizen.
And by the way, part of the reason I think that Trump also liked Tillerson, because he felt he had inroads to people like Putin and others and had relationships.
And he did. But Tillerson said as a result of the Russian spy in Britain and the attack against him and his daughter and some people who happen to be in the area with poison, that Putin is out of control and needs to be reined in.
the best contacts.
The Red Berets are helping the cities in fear.
The best sources.
Rita, that was an explosive interview.
Chasing it down. Curtis and Cosby, 77 WABC.
As the Republican-led House Committee investigating Russian collusion during the presidential campaign decided to fold up, issue their report that they found absolutely no collusion whatsoever. And then, obviously, the arguments were underway all of a sudden last night on Aaron Burnett on CNN. Congressman Tom Rooney said the following.
Senate hasn't ended theirs. Bob Mueller hasn't ended theirs. Why are you all ending it?
Well, two things. For what I said last week, that we've gone completely off the rails and now we're just basically a political forum for people to leak information to drive the day's news. So we've, as you alluded to, we've lost all credibility and we're going to issue probably two different reports, unfortunately. So in that regard, that's why I called for the investigation. And,
you know, it's pretty interesting to hear that because I never really understood once Mueller came in why there was. Sometimes there's a reason to have these sort of separate investigations, Curtis, but I think in this particular case, because Mueller clearly is casting a really wide net, I don't really see a reason why the Republicans or the Democrats are doing their
own. I know, and it has nothing to do with party affiliation. It's called grandstanding.
Yes.
FaceTime.
Yeah.
Press conference after press conference. The Republican majority will suddenly be supportive of the president. The Democrats will suggest that the president is worse than Joe Stalin and Mao Zedong combined.
Well, and that's why it's so confusing, because just as you're saying, I've never seen, you know, I mean, it's such unbelievable disparate views. And when the news broke last night that the House Intel Committee had wrapped up, then you have to look at it and go, okay, well, the House Intel Committee is led by Republicans because, of course, they have the majority. And they, of course, would come to that conclusion. The Democrats, as you just heard, were like, whoa, 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 not so fast. But how are you going to put stock in either one of them when they are just so divided and so disparate? It's almost like just throw it out, both of them.
Well, the U.S. Senate's investigation, and you wonder, why two investigations when you already have Mueller and his inquisitors on this? They don't seem to be as fractured. They seem to be more of a bipartisan approach to this.
Mueller?
No, the Senate.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Senate.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Why, when you have a special prosecutor with his assistants, who obviously are going in a lot of different areas to find information. In fact, a former CIA member had this to say about the House report, two reports that will be issued as they close their books.
If this report were written on toilet paper, I wouldn't stoop to wipe my ass with it. These people owe us more, and they gave us less.
How does he really feel, huh?
And I would be in agreement, because I don't trust the Democrat report or the Republican report, because it's clearly biased.
It's so slanted. And also, after some of the details came out about some of the information, and I thought it was very powerful when, like, Devin Nunes and some of those others were talking about some of the they did uncover some of the routing of, you know, the Christopher Steele, and some of that other stuff did come from them. So fair enough, I thought that was important. But it was such a different report and different interpretation. And of course, the Democrats, when they released that report, said, whoa, wait, okay, well, maybe this tentacle and this tentacle, but they left out these five others.
So
how are you going to have an unbiased,
what was,
you know,
the presidential tweet about the House closing its investigation?
It was all caps. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because Donald Trump is very extemporaneous.
Yes.
How's that for a word? And if you look at even just his Twitters, he's very expressive, and he doesn't always do it in caps. But last night, as soon as it came out, it was these huge capital letters saying they've concluded it's a witch hunt. After 14 months, it's wrapped up. And, of course, it is far from wrapped up.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, were you sort of dancing the horror and the tarantella because the House committee said no collusion? The Senate has yet to weigh in on it. Their committee and the Mueller investigation with his inquisitors continues. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
And I wonder how long we're going to be talking about Russia. I mean, will we be talking about Russia in the 2020 race? We very well may be talking about Russia. I think the way Mueller is going, and there's some new details that he was talking a bit about Roger Stone, who you and I both know, and that he had asked Sam Nunberg, who was here on our show exclusively not too long ago,
yes,
a lot about Roger Stone, a lot about did Roger Stone have contacts with Julian Assange, what was the context with WikiLeaks. So if you listen to that line of questioning, and Sam has been pretty open about talking about what happens behind closed doors.
Right, but also you have now, and it's almost like Periscope's up every day for the investigators, the president's personal assistant was taken out of the West Wing of the White House on Monday. Taken out. Not
yeah,
like,
but you don't know if that's related to anything other than
that doesn't
know,
look
some
good.
Other issue.
It
no,
does
it
not look good. And immediately given a job with the reelection campaign for Donald Trump 3 years before the election.
Well, that's the thing. Why would you assign someone who has some issue that doesn't fulfill the criteria to have a security
release?
If you're
one of the investigators, you say to Mueller, let's bring this guy in.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Why did they escort him out and then immediately give him a job in the campaign? I think he might know something that we're interested in. So every day, it's almost like Christmas time for the investigators with the Trump administration. 1-800-848-WABC. Are you dancing the horror, the tarantella, that the House has closed its investigation and said no collusion with the Russians, with the Trump campaign? 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Lisa, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Lisa.
Hi, how are you guys?
First good.
Of all, Rita, welcome. I'm so glad you're on with Curtis now.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm really happy about that. Yes, I'm very happy that they concluded it. I think this is time to kind of move on at this point.
But do you think we ever will? I feel like I'm going to be hearing about Russian collusion the rest of my life, Lisa.
You know, to be honest with you, I don't think, to really be honest, I don't think people are really care about it anymore.
I think the average American, I agree with you, Lisa. I think the average American doesn't, you know, but I think investigators do. And, you know, I think, you know, it's red meat for the Democrats. It's a midterm election year. And then you got the presidential race, you know, not too far behind that.
Well, Lisa, we'll have a way to assess that tonight at the polls in Western Pennsylvania, when poll takers will probably be asking that question, both Republican poll takers and Democratic poll takers, regardless of who wins, Saccone,
I think they're going to be talking about tariffs and steel and a lot of other things.
You know, all you need is one issue that sways 2 or 3% of the vote, and you have a tremendous dynamic that has changed the course of what can be the 2020 election. But tonight, perfect litmus test, because you got a Democrat lamb who's no lamb when it comes to gun rights, having fought for the United States as a United States Marine and having said he will not support Pelosi as the leader of the Democrats, minority leader in the House, and that he'd be more than happy to meet with Donald Trump.
Yeah, and that's, by the way, I think going to be the sort of template, no matter how it goes, because even if, you know, Rick Saccone wins, the Republican wins, it's still the fact that it's a tight race in a district where Donald Trump won by almost 20 percentage points last time. So the fact that it's so close, even if the Democrat loses, you can bet that this midterm election, whoever is running on the Democratic side is going to try to distance themselves quite a bit.
What's going to happen? Let's assume there's an upset. Lamb wins. The DNC is going to say, no more beef, no more chicken. Find us lambs out there. We need candidates like Lamb.
Oh, you know it.
If we're going to win the midterm elections and then
say,
win the presidency.
Nancy Pelosi who? Right. Nancy Pelosi who?
Let's go to Pete, who's calling from New Rochelle. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Pete.
Hey, Curtis, man. I always love hearing you on the radio, man. The guardian angel king, man.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, I'm from California originally.
Hmm.
And I'm a little suspect of this shifty shift guy here, and being from California, I've seen how he's worked before. I don't want to sound like one of those people that wears, you know, the foil hat in the basement there, but from what I recall, he's got a lot of weird connections.
Yeah, he does. And listen, he's clearly partisan, just like the Republicans are partisan on the other side.
Right, but you got two Californians here. You had Nunes, who was the chairman. You have Schiff, minority chairman, so to speak. So can we trust anyone from California in this regard, Pete?
Isn't weed legal in marijuana now? You know, right?
Well, so. as far as anybody from California, no, because look at who you have running California. But then again, I don't trust the Republicans wholeheartedly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're both so biased.
Understood.
That's right. Correct.
And that's why everyone is still, no matter what your feelings are about Mueller and his inquisitors, they're going to be waiting for their report to the people, the American people, their report to the House, the Senate, in terms of what their investigation has led to. 1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis and Cosby.
The group dedicated to fight crime.
They're going to chase it down.
From the street perspective, Curtis Sliwa.
All of it.
Please welcome Rita Cosby.
There's a lot of heat on the president.
The headlines, the issues, the people.
America!
From New York to D.C. to your neighborhood.
The Red Berets are helping the cities in fear.
Curtis Sliwa.
Founder and president of the Guardian Angels, Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Rita, that was an explosive interview.
Live, local, on it. Curtis and Cosby.
Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Curtis
Cosby.
77 WABC.
Sure has.
Just to let everyone know, you don't want to miss the drive home at 5 tonight that I host. It'll be Corruption Central.
Ah, what a surprise.
We will focus on the guilty verdict that came down the pipe hours ago in the Southern District, downtown Manhattan, in federal court against the wartime consigliere of Andrew Evilize Cuomo. That's Joe Pococo.
Yep, three guilty verdicts.
The start of the corruption trial against Mangano, the former county executive, the Hazari, the pig with his beak in the trough, and the no-show job that his wife had. Interesting, Pococo's wife had a low-show job.
You got to get the lingo, right?
Mangano is being accused of procuring for his wife a no-show job. We'll get into all those nitty-gritty details.
And let me tell you about someone who actually is doing a job, quite the opposite, because everybody, you want to stay tuned, because at 2:30, we're going to have an exclusive interview with Shaquille O'Neal, the NBA superstar. And he's got a great story. This is one of, so many times you see these athletes and these celebrities who are boasting about what they do. And this is one of these guys who, I've known Shaquille a number of years, but never knew all the amazing work that he does for kids. And one of these unsung heroes. And last night got a big award from the Jefferson Awards Foundation. He's going to talk about what it means giving back to kids. But he also is in an amazing position because he's been a reserve officer. He was part of the LA Sheriff's Office. He was part of a couple different, law enforcement groups in Florida and elsewhere, familiar with that area, Parkland School. We talked a lot about guns and also should there be more officers in school. He's a gun owner and he also knows President Trump. So he's in a very unique position. And I think the really interesting, fascinating Shaquille O'Neal is going to be with us at 2:30. You do not want to miss our exclusive interview talking about that.
The Shaq on attack. But there is a situation that has unfolded that has become national news out of the state of Idaho, right on the border with Utah. Biology. Think of your biology class, Rita Cosby. I remember back at Bildersee Junior High School, everyone couldn't wait to get into biology class. I was in 7SP. I forget who the biology class teacher was, but
I was the other way because I feel like girls. I feel like we were we get a little more squeamish. You guys were like, "Hey, bring it on,"
Yeah, he had the schmata on, the schmuck, and we knew that at some point in that year we would be dissecting frogs.
And you looked forward to that moment.
Well, I got to tell you, many of us had already done that in the lots in Canarsie. Frogs, insects, the whole nine yards. It was nothing new, but to find out from a biological point of view the importance of dissecting frogs.
And it smelled, though, didn't it? Like, I remember when I did it in my class, it was like, just the stink and the smell. I think the guys got into it more than the girls. The girls were like, let's go talk in the back of the room about polish.
I grossed out some of the girls in the class when I said,
more than usual?
Pass the gray poupon.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
And people were like, oh, man, get him out of here. Yeah.
Did you really? Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I hated biology. I hated science and math. I didn't do well at all. But I was also a wise guy in the biology class.
What a surprise.
This is a biology class that has really caused a lot of consternation. Lifelong biology teacher.
And by the way, a beloved teacher, yep, too, which is an interesting background on him.
In junior high school, has been accused after school at a special session of students who are like really into biology. And he's accused of feeding a puppy to the class snapping turtle. And the school now is trying to sort of build distance between what he did and what their rules are by claiming that the demonstration was after school, although it was on school grounds. School was over for the day. They were unaware of what the biology teacher had intended to do, that it was not part of any scheduled school event, that it was a regrettable circumstance involving some of the quote, unquote, biological specimens.
Although this guy has done it before, and that's what's so interesting, not the puppy from what we're hearing, but he apparently fed guinea pigs to the snakes that he keeps in the classroom. And then, you know what's so bizarre is the parents, apparently, obviously, that's getting so much media attention because he was doing these little after-hour experiments. And some of the parents who apparently love this teacher in kind of a weird twist have said that the puppy was deformed and was going to die soon. And that it was, quote, this is like the weirdest quote, it was very much the circle of life.
So Darwinian.
So bring it in, Roy, bring it on.
Darwinian, survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, though, this is
sounds
what an
like
animal.
Vladimir Putin's
animal,
Russia, you know.
Rights activist Jill Parrish, though, had to say about this biological experiment on school grounds at this junior high school in Idaho.
I'm not going to allow this to be swept under the rug because I know exactly how it works in small towns. Allowing children to watch an innocent baby puppy scream because it is being fed to an animal. That is violence. That is not okay.
You imagine a little puppy dog?
Oh, I can't. I was mortified seeing a little insect or seeing a frog. I would have been repulsed.
Being fed to this snapping turtle, as apparently this teacher had fed guinea pigs previously to snakes and
after
the snapping
hours.
Turtle.
Can you imagine, hey, everybody, hang around. I'm going to feed a puppy today.
So,
I mean, oh.
Let's put together a Curtis and Cosby jury here and determine the fate of this teacher, since the parents apparently have given him a pass.
Yeah, that's what's kind of wild.
The school is building, let's just say, yardage between them and he, because they sense the animal rights community is going to be filing lawsuits.
Yeah, big time.
And he will not answer questions.
Yeah, so what does everybody think out there? It's 1-800-848-9222. 1-800-848-9222. Is it science or is it repulsive? I say it's just disgusting. I mean, I think, first of all, I love animals. I love dogs. I grew up in a dog family my whole life. And to me, it breaks my heart. And who is this guy to decide that he's the arbiter of the circle of life?
And let's just assume that the description of this puppy was correct, that the puppy was deformed, it was on its last limbs.
So what, we owe this teacher? Thank you for saving the puppy
right.
from his misery?
The puppy
give me a break.
Was not healthy as we
oh.
hear this puppy is. But actually maybe whimpering and, you know, on its last leg, so to speak. And as part of a biological after-school class, he was feeding it to the snapping turtle, as he had guinea pigs in the past to the many snakes that he had in his biological class. Now, I've been with snake owners.
Yes.
And I've seen them feed mice, rats, guinea pigs.
Oh, yeah, they do it all the time.
Right
but to do it afterwards, and by the way, I'm going to be posting next week. I have a picture of a snake wrapped around my neck. Only about a week ago, because as you know, I was over in North Africa and I was in Morocco. And one of the last things I did was I had the monkey handlers, you know, those
sure,
guys.
Sure.
And I have a shot of a snake wrapped around me, near me. And I'm going to be putting that up next week on our social media.
Oh, please,
I got some good
do.
Shots. But I was not feeding it any guinea pigs or anything at the time, for the
Let's
record.
Let's quickly go to Bob, who's calling from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Cosby here at WABC. Bobby.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Curtis and Rita, you guys remember me, right? How you doing?
Hey, Bob. Refresh our memory, but go ahead, Bob.
You guys, all right, listen, my thing is they should take the teacher and feed it to an alligator, and we could all stand around and watch that. I mean, you know, I mean, why not, right?
Yeah.
Why not feed the teacher to an alligator?
There you go. There's the sound effects even for you there, Bob.
But honestly, Rita, you there?
Yes, I'm here. You can't hear me over the groans, but I'm here. That's Curtis. That's Curtis.
Yeah, the gator. That's used to Curtis. Be the sound of my stomach when I had Crohn's disease.
That's Curtis when he hasn't eaten.
Right, okay. But Rita, I want to say thank you for sticking up for President Trump. Thank you for hanging in there and sticking up for him.
Well, I'm a big believer in fair is fair, yeah. And I know the guy, so I thank you.
And do me a favor. I know you know him personally. Tell him I said hello, and Bob's a big supporter, okay?
I will. Pass it on, right, Bob. Thanks so much.
Oh, I'm sure the president wants to hear that Bob's a big supporter.
Hey, you never know. He might like it.
Anyway, let's go to Steve, who is calling from Port Washington. Welcome to Curtis and Cosby here on WABC. Stevie.
Hey, guys. Rita, you're the perfect gang to that lovable Dr. Ying, so I appreciate you very much. We need you to counterbalance the loveliness of our
you know what? It's the rose next to the thorn. You know, it's a hard job, but I'm trying to do it.
Well, you know, rose bushes, the thorns grow down to keep animals from going up. Did you know that?
Which, by the way, is a good comparison given this dynamic right now.
Absolutely. So here's the story. I don't remember any of that stuff with dissect. Anytime you do anything to an animal, including the science, the pharmaceutical companies, if you want to do medical experiments, go to guys that are on death row and give them an opportunity to live by becoming those vehicles for experiments. Don't, you got to stop with these poor animals that suffer for days, months. It's not right. It's not natural.
What would you do to this teacher, lifelong biology teacher, who is loved by so many in that community?
You can't, bottom line is, it comes under the umbrella of if you go against what we would want, which is not to hurt animals, not to do anything, then you're guilty, no matter who it is, whether it's a principal, a teacher, a student. You know, when I hear on the news, you read about some kids, you know, like this guy, this kid who killed the tragedy of the seven dead youths in Texas. He was cutting off heads of animals.
Steve, that's the first thing I thought about with all this, too, when you hear about, like, a puppy and some other things. It's like, it's twisted. There's something a little unseemly to me, and you're right. You hear the history of all these Jeffrey Dahmers and all these other crazy guys who, there's a pattern there.
Let's go to James in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita here on WABC. James.
Hi, James.
Good afternoon. my only comment is I'm 35. I graduated high school in 2000. I was in second grade about, maybe 28 years ago. So my second grade teacher had a 6-foot boa constrictor in the classroom in a tank, and it was regularly fed live mice during class. And there were no permission slips. There was no uproar. It was just what Mr. Elsesser did.
Well, let me ask you, James, how would you feel if they suddenly say, okay, well, that's nice. Now, today we're doing a puppy.
Well, the only analog I can draw to that from my experience is being in a biology class where we had, the frog dissection and, the specimens in jars.
But wouldn't you have been mortified? I'm telling you, listen, I remember the frog dissection. I hated it. I thought it was disgusting. I thought it smelled. I thought it was messy. But to me, I think a puppy is a whole other league.
Well,
it's like there's something, a cute little puppy.
Well, Rita, let's quickly go to Margaret
on.
In Queens. Welcome to WABC. Margaret?
Yes, it's heavily looks like shades of sadism and Jeffrey Dahmer. The whole thing, I think it's showing children things that they don't need to be shown.
Yeah, what are they going to learn, Margaret? What are they going to learn from something like this? Is there any scientific virtue to this?
Well, there might be something that clicks in their head and turns them towards sadism.
Right, it desensitizes. And you know what? What I think is so, it makes me wonder, as you're suggesting, Margaret, that what does he do that we don't know about? This is what he does after hours. What is he doing when he's at home?
I think we should have a look in his closet.
I'm with you. I'll be right behind you, Margaret, as we walk in.
Well, you know what I would suggest, because normally dogs and cats are at odds, although sometimes they get along, is just line the guy with catnip and then turn the cats loose on him.
Absolutely. Or bring Michael Vick in, right?
Right.
You know, he's got expertise in this area.
Yeah, Michael Vick, who would sick his dogs.
Yeah, remember that?
And kill them if they didn't perform well in the ring, the dog fighting ring down in Virginia. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
America!
Curtis Sliwa.
From the street perspective, Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Please welcome Rita Cosby.
Curtis and Cosby.
The new Midday Show. Streaming now. WABCRadio.com.
Last night, I was at an amazing event in New York City for the Jefferson Awards Foundation, which gives out the top national recognition for those who are heavily involved in public service. And one of the big honorees, and boy, do I mean big, is 7'1" NBA Hall of Famer Shaquille O'Neal. Now, I've known Shaq for a long time, and I have learned that there's a lot more to this guy than just basketball. We talked about his tough youth growing up in Newark, a story you don't often hear, and also his role in helping kids year-round. And also, remember, he's a law enforcement, he's a reserve officer in a lot of different law enforcement departments. He knows police very well and many sheriff's departments. So I asked him about school safety, including in Florida, a place that he knows well. And I also asked him about his big Jefferson Award. Here's our conversation. And joining me now is Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille, great to see you again.
Just want to say you look fabulous. I don't know your age, but I'm predicting 24, 25.
Thank you very much. Actually, 18. You're way off.
Oh, 18. I'm way off. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And speaking of 18-year-olds, you are doing so much for kids. And that's why you're getting honored by the Jefferson Awards Foundation. It's the biggest awards for national public service. How does it feel for you to be honored by the Jefferson Awards?
It feels really good. You know, it's something that I've been doing all my life, something I was not expecting an award for. You know, some people call it giving back. This is what I was taught ever since being a youngster. My father gets some extra cash, and he said, let's go eat. Keep in mind, when I say let's go eat, it's not a sit-down restaurant. It's fast food. So he gets a White Castle. He gets 6 or 7 double cheese. I get 6 or 7. We can't finish them. So on the way home, sees a homeless guy with a sign that says, we'll work for food. So my father pulls over, gives him the cheeseburger, and he looks at me and says, son, if you ever make it big time and you can help those in need, the ones that need it more, make sure you always do that. When my father was my high school coach, every time a kid got hurt in the development or in the Boys and Girls Club, he would make all of us go visit all the six children at the hospital. And, one time my mother, she helped me create Shaka Claus. She went to see 3,000 kids, the Boys and Girls Club. A lot of those kids, mostly all the kids, were not receiving gifts on that day. I told her I would take care of it. Went to Toys R Us, spent about $500,000 on toys, and all the kids were happy. So I've been doing Shaka Claus for 25 years. I've been doing Shaq's Giving for 25 years. I've been doing Shaka Bunny. I'll rent like 30 acres, and me and my friends will go buy eggs, and we'll put money in the eggs, and we'll do a big Easter egg hunt. This is just stuff that I was taught. I don't do it for the award. I do it to make people smile.
Shaquille, I've known you on and off for a number of years and seen you on the public side. But here's a unique side to also share your story. I never knew this about you. And here I've known you for years. I didn't know the story about growing up in Newark. What brought you to this moment? It was a difficult road.
It was a difficult road. My story of a superstar is not the regular story of a guy that's been celebrated all his life. Biological father left my mother and I when I was 2. Father met a guy when I was 4 or 5. He was a drill sergeant, very tough, disciplinarian. I thought he was being hard on me, but as I ride around in the car every day and realize how blessed I am, it was the perfect way to be raised. You know, he passed away. I wish I could tell him thank you all the time, because without him and my mother, the creators of the character known as Shaq, I definitely wouldn't be here. I learned a lot of lessons along the way. I learned to treat people as you expect them to be, not as they are. I learned to, help those in need. I learned to make people smile. And, my mission in life, especially now with all the stuff we got going on, if I could make you smile for a couple of seconds all the way up to the rest of the day, that's what I want to be known for.
You've also been involved with March for Our Lives. I saw you tweeting about it. I follow you on Twitter. I love it. And you're talking about this event. This is a demand to the end of gun violence. Why did you think that's important? It's so current right now, of course, and it's such an important issue, especially given what happened in Florida, a place you know well.
You know, two things that have never mixed is children and guns. It was a very, very sad incident. Close to my heart. I actually live in Fort Lauderdale. I actually knew the sheriff. Called him and told him he did a wonderful job. And the stuff that it's 2018. You would think stuff like that would never happen. And, you know, something has to be done. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about getting these guns off the streets. The only problem with that is there's 15 million of them out there already on the streets. And then another problem is if you ban them, then you're going to create an underground market, and the gun collectors, you know, is going to become more valuable. I think the quick fix now, the government should give law enforcement more money. Get more money, you recruit more people, and the guys that are not ready to go on the streets, you put them in front of the schools. You put them in front of the schools, you put them behind the schools, you put them inside the schools. And we need to pass information. The principal, I mean, because, you know, you hear a lot of stuff. So I'm hearing that the guy came back and said he was going to do something. The principal should have passed that information on. There was some talks about the FBI having the information. Everybody should have passed that on. I think sometimes we need to be proactive instead of reactive. But hopefully things like this doesn't happen again. I'm glad the people, the children, are going to march on the 24th. I wish I could join them, but, you know, hopefully it sends a message to the powers to be, because we have to stop this. I would like to see tougher background checks. You know, it was just a sad incident, and I really feel for the parents. Imagine being a parent going to work and you getting a call that your baby was gunned down for no reason at all. I mean, I couldn't imagine. You know, I really, you know, feel for those parents. So hopefully the powers that be can get something done, because the children are the future. I mean, you know, we have to protect our children. And if you can't protect our children in school, where are they safe?
Would you like to see more armed guards then, is what you're saying?
I would like to see police officers. I would like to see police officers in schools, inner cities, private schools. I would like to see them. And, you know, the government, you know, there's a lot of money. We should say, you know what, law enforcement agencies, we're going to give you, you know, we're going to bump it up a few, 20, 40 million, and all schools need to be protected. I mean, because I remember, I grew up on a military base, and there was always military police in front of the school, behind the school, you know, and you know, as a kid, you're very mischief. We didn't have a lot of 3 p.m. fights. They were all over the base. You start fighting around 3 p.m. because the military police would show up. So I would like to see our kids, you know, protected a little more.
You know the president. I know the president. Have you thought about reaching out to him on this issue?
No, I haven't. You know, I've always been taught to, you know, stay away from politics. It's a lot of people voicing their opinions, a lot of people reaching out, you know, so hopefully the powers will be will make the right decision. But again, you know, you talk about banning these weapons. It's a lot of those weapons are already on the streets. So it's not like if you say, okay, these weapons are banned, people are going to go, oh, man, let me turn it in. That's definitely not going to happen. Because once you ban them, now they're going to become a collector's item, and you're going to have people underground. Hey, they were $2,000, I give you $9,000 for that gun. So, you know, we just need to, you know, keep our eyes open. You know, just listen, and, you know, we need to share information. Like, if you have information of somebody that's threatening or going to do something, you need to release that information immediately.
Before I let you go, of course, on a much different topic, it's obviously the throes of March Madness. I've been looking at your Twitter feed. You've been talking about the brackets. What are you predicting? Who are you predicting?
Well, I haven't really filled it out yet, but Arizona's looking pretty good. North Carolina's looking good. Villanova's looking good. Duke is, you know, is a team you always have to be weary of. May the best team win. You know, March Madness is really, really great time to watch college basketball. I always say I've won on every level except college. So if I had it all over to do again, I would have loved to go back in time and win a college championship.
Well, you certainly have won a lot, and especially have come a long way from Newark. Congratulations on the Jefferson Award. Well deserved.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You know, and if you got to look at the Twitter feed, you got to look at our Curtis and Cosby Twitter feed, because there's this great picture, Curtis, of 7'1" Shaquille O'Neal and 5'4" Rita Cosby. I look like a little ant next to Shaquille O'Neal. And kudos to him and all the Jefferson Awards winners.
Well, it's interesting because tomorrow it is the National Breakout Day, 10 a.m. at high schools across America. Kids are supposed to be showing solidarity with the folks who were killed at Parkland High School, the 17 and the 16 injured. It's a plea for more gun control. They're supposedly leaving their campuses at 10. They'll have a commemoration outside and then go back into the school. I'll be checking some high schools to see if, in fact, that's real.
I was going to say, let's see if they go. By the way, it was interesting because Shaquille O'Neal knows, you know, he's from Fort Lauderdale and went through the training for law enforcement down there.
lives in Lauderdale and knew the sheriff and knew a lot of the people. So this hits very close to home.
Well, just an update on what's happening outside of Parkland High School. As we saw the kids return with the teachers to school, there were armies of law enforcement. There were sheriff's deputies. There were municipal police. There were state police. There were even feds there. If you go there today, there's a few cops. And there's the Guardian Angels from Broward County. We've been given a tent outside.
Wow.
In which we actually vet people going in and out of the school. So with all the hype, with all the attention from all over the world, you would have thought the sheriff's department, Sheriff Israel, the guy who's been grandstanding, would have had a contingent of sheriff's deputies outside, constantly vigilant. They're vetting people going in and out.
But now it's thin, you're saying, even after all this. That's astounding after such a short period of time.
You can actually go on to the Curtis and Cosby Facebook page. I've posted the most recent article about the Guardian Angels who are out there. We've been requested to be there by the teachers, the parents, and the kids. It's sad because that stigma that was cast on deputy sheriffs responding initially to the shooting by Cruz continues to linger.
Yeah, that's the stand back orders and why didn't they go in,
right. So
and the confusion.
Some teachers, some parents, and some of the kids are saying, we don't want the sheriff's deputies, which is a mistake. You want more, not less.
Well, and you even heard from Shaq. And it was interesting to get his perspective because here's a guy, he's a gun owner. He's also someone who knows Florida well, has a big appreciation for law enforcement, but obviously a huge supporter of kids, too. And so it was interesting to get his perspective,
well,
you know, where he was talking about
it. I'll be able to tell you exactly how many kids are breaking out tomorrow at 10 a.m., at least in the high schools that I peruse before.
Yeah, you're going to have the Guardian Angels out and about on that one.
Exactly. Before I return here to join you, Rita, at 12 noon for our broadcast tomorrow.